Very good. So please, those coming in, find a nice place. Those outside, nice for you to come in. And in a few moments, I'll start this evening's talk. Excellent. So for this evening's Dhamma talk, just coming here this afternoon on the freeway, seeing that there's now already double demerits for anyone who speeds or breaks the law. It's already the holiday season, it's Christmas time. So for this evening's the Buddhist use of the next couple of weeks. This is Buddhamas time. So, well, first of all, that sometimes people keep complaining that Christmas time has got so materialistic, but there's much more to this time than just material stuff. And there's many, many ways that we can use, you know, this time. First of all, it's holiday time. You've got time off from work. You've got time to spend by yourself, and that's so hard to find these days. And it's one of the reasons for many people getting health issues, emotional issues. They just don't know how to take time off and relax. As I said recently, that it was Louis Pascal who said all the problems of mankind and female kind as well come from not knowing how to sit still, how to have some time by yourself, how to be peaceful. It's one of the reasons we have centers like this. It's one of the reasons we have monasteries. It was one of the reasons why I used to have churches, as I have noticed before, that those were places where any time you wanted, you can go in and sit down and get some peace and quiet, just to relax, to unwind. And these are old stories again, which just keep coming up, that when I was a young man living in London, if ever I was doing any shopping, any business in London, one of my favourite places was Westminster Cathedral, right in the middle of the city, opposite the Houses of Parliament. And you'd go in there and just find a nice quiet place in this cavernous, huge building, and sit down and be quiet, just to relax from the noise and busyness of the London streets. And just before I came to become a monk, about 41 years ago, I was busy, I think, getting visas or something, and then I decided, oh, I need some rest. Go to a nice quiet place where you can just relax and be still. And I went into Westminster Cathedral, and that's the last time I've ever been in there, because whoever organizes and runs that place, they decided to put in a PA system where there was announcements, sermons. There was no peace and quiet left at all. They destroyed something which was, to me, sacred. Silence, peace. And so this is a wonderful time for the next couple of weeks, or whatever you've got on, and times of holidays. Find some silence over Christmas. One of the favourite Christmas carols, Silent Night. It's very hard to find Silent Night at Christmas. Everybody's making so much noise having parties. But if we go back to the tradition of Silent Night, isn't it wonderful just to find a place you can really relax? So, go off to the beach and see how many waves come in an hour. Count them. Go into your garden and count the blades of grass. Go into a forest and, as I often say, see if you can see a tree growing. They do grow. But it takes a lot of patience and silence to watch and see the tree grow. Often it's when you're thinking of something else, you look somewhere else, that's when it grows. So these are just crazy things we can do. Just like counting the waves, counting the grass in your lawn, or seeing a tree grow. It's just an excuse for doing nothing. Unfortunately, these days we do need excuses for doing nothing, to relax, to find some silence. Because if you're sitting in a garden and your partner asks you, what are you doing? And you say, nothing. Oh, great, you can come and help me. People just do not respect the sacredness of doing nothing these days. That's why you have to give it excuses. That's my excuse. I don't ever say I'm doing nothing. I say I'm counting the grass, or watching the trees grow, or counting the waves. Anything to make it look like you're doing something, but really you're just relaxing and being silent. Because it's just giving yourself a Christmas gift of peace, of silence, is a wonderful way to relax the mind, bring health to the body, and bring happiness to your life. What was it we had over in our monastery down in Serpentine? I was reading this in a little article I gave, and it was happened. There was this fellow who came to see me just after the meal. He turned out to be in our local council. He was a local building surveyor. And he came up there and he said, I've come to say thank you because I'm retiring tomorrow. I said, thank you for what? He said, thank you for your car park. What on earth do you mean? And he said, whenever he felt stress in his office, he would drive to Bodhinyana Monastery in Serpentine, just park his car in the car park. Indeed. And relax. Find some stillness. And he said, even though he's still sitting in his car, the monastery was a place of quiet and peace, where whenever he was stressed out at work, he could go. And he said, thank you so much. That saved me from so many breakdowns, so much ill health, which it does do. Know that your health is really important. I not just mean your physical health, I mean your mental health as well. Because when you get sick, you know, you're obviously not productive, it doesn't feel good, but especially when you're emotionally sick, we usually take it out on our friends and loved ones. We get grumpy, we get angry, we say the wrong things, and all it is because we don't have enough rest in life. So this is a great time. Stop going on holidays to places. That just tires you out. That just stresses you out even more when you're flying or traveling in a car. Instead, you've got these beautiful homes you paid so much money for. And there's no place like home. There's no bed in any hotel like your own bed. And there's no sort of food like the food, you know, you can cook for yourself, or especially if you go and stay with your mum, your mother's food. Go and stay there and say, Mum, I'm coming on holiday at your house. And just learn how to relax. And when you're there, learn how to do nothing and have some peace in life. If any of you over the Christmas time, holiday time, are getting bored, then go to the monastery for the day. There's two or three monasteries now. Nice peaceful places where you can just hang out and just enjoy the peace there. Because that's what this Christmas is supposed to be about. Peace to all men and women. And how do we find that peace in our life? Sometimes we've got to go to a peaceful place. When you go to that peaceful place, we suck it in from outside. There's so many places in my life, because I'm a Buddhist monk, you seek out the quiet, peaceful places. And when you go to those quiet, peaceful places, if you haven't had any success in meditation now, it's impossible not to have success in meditation in some of these quiet, peaceful places. I remember one place I used to go to in Thailand, deep in a beautiful little idyllic place in the middle of the forest in the mountains, had these wonderful deep caves. And some of these caves, when you go inside them, they were so cool and they were so silent, I mean really silent. The peace was just all around you. You couldn't ignore it. It doesn't matter how restless you were, it's like, you know, diving into a swimming pool. You just got wet. You're in that peace and you just got soaked with it. And your mind became so still and peaceful and happy as well. When you came out afterwards, wow, all your problems and difficulties had gone. It's just like some people's presence was very peaceful as well. I remember this, the monks know this so many times, I love telling the story of when I went to see one of the holy monks in Thailand many years ago, one of the most impressive monks I've ever met. And like everybody, I had all these questions, and all the questions I had were all because my mind was not peaceful. It was so restless. And when you're restless, you find a question about anything, and you answer that question, you just have another question afterwards. I had this whole list of questions to ask this really great monk. Now, he was one of these monks when I first came to Thailand 41 years ago. He'd just been released from hospital with incurable cancer. Doctors gave up on him, and he said, well, if I'm going to die, I might as well die in my monastery rather than dying in the hospital in Bangkok. So he went up to his monastery in Nong Khai, and about 21 years later he died. You know, sometimes when you have some peace and quiet, it's brilliant for your health. Again, a lot of physical problems happen because we don't know how to find some peace and stillness in our life. But not only that, now, I had all these questions about, you know, life, the meaning of life, philosophy, and finding a great person to ask these questions from. But honestly, as soon as you went into the room to see this guy, I had to make an appointment and wait for a couple of hours because other people wanted to ask this guy also. As soon as I went into his presence, my mind went totally peaceful and blank. I had not one question in my mind. And that was where all my questions were answered. Not by giving answers, but by peace, by stillness, by calm. That was the answer to the questions. And it was so satisfying, because you know what it's like? You have these discussions with people, they have these debates, someone says one thing, and then they say another thing, they ask this question, and it goes on and on and on and on and on. Apparently, I just read in the news that there is a TV program called Q&A, and you think by now, it's been going on apparently for quite a few years now, you think by now they'd have all the questions answered. But they never have all the questions answered. Even they're supposed to get the experts. You know, can all the questions be answered by experts? Can all the philosophical conundrums be answered by asking some holy man or holy woman what the answers are? Absolutely not. You just get more questions afterwards. But when you go to a real expert, all the questions just subside. Your mind is peaceful. And there you find the only solution to the questions of your life. Not in another answer, but in peace and stillness. And of course that's what I saw with this great, great monk. And interesting, at the time, I always thought, wow, I don't want to leave this place. I thought they're going to have to drag me out of this presence of this great monk. I felt so content and happy, so peaceful. Because one of the things which I learned there, which I try to practice ever since, I felt totally accepted and loved unconditionally. That here was one fellow who was not going to criticize me, put me down, or hurt me in any which way. And to understand how I felt, it was only later on, one of the monks helped me with a simile. It's called the simile of the spikes. He said that everybody has invisible spikes coming out from their body. They're invisible, you can't see them. But if you get close to them, you get scratched. You say the wrong thing, you invade their space, you challenge their ego. Whatever it is, you get too close and you get scratched. You know what I'm talking about? Some people have got very long spikes. They just come into the room and you feel really uncomfortable. And some people have just got average spikes, like you have. People sitting next to you, you know, you don't get scratched. But you go a bit too close, you know, in my personal space, out of here, and you get scratched. And there are some people who have got hardly any spikes at all. But you get too close to them, and you know, you find out that they start to bark. But there are some people, amazing people, who have got no spikes at all. And that was this monk. No spikes at all. Doesn't matter who you were, what you did, you felt totally at ease. He didn't have any personal space. There was no person in there at all, just kindness, compassion. And that was such a wonderful experience of actually not being taught this, not having it as an answer to a question, but actually experiencing what it's like to be totally accepted and loved. Unconditionally, so you felt 100% safe and secure. Not only that, but you didn't have to do anything to meet this person's expectations. You didn't have to strive, you know, to be worthy of this person's love. You didn't have to be anything or do anything. It was there already. You'd arrived, you'd achieved, it was there. The goal was finished. The end of the journey. Now you could relax. You had what you were searching for. The real answers to the questions. Just you were accepted, loved, by a fellow with no spikes. And that was such a wonderful experience of just, from that stillness, what peace and goodwill to all people actually means. It's a wonderful little slogan for Christmas. Peace and goodwill to all beings. And it's not just all men, all beings as well, animals, whatever it is in this world. Being kind, being gentle, being soft, so no one ever feels afraid in your presence, which is a beautiful thing. Those of you who do go to places like our monasteries, you see all the animals come around. They're not afraid of us. In fact, they usually take advantage of us. On the paths. Now, we built those paths going, you know, from the cooties and the huts, and the kangaroos, they just sit there, and we have to walk around them. They don't get out. They're totally disrespectful. Very love that. What is that kangaroos do? The monks. Okay, the monks are not supposed to feed kangaroos. It's bad for them. But, you know, the kangaroos don't know that. They think it's fun. I remember once leaving some food for the kangaroos because, you know, I was on retreat. I took my food, my one meal a day, back in my bowl to my hut to eat it. And there was some stuff left over. And, you know, the kangaroos were looking at you. Said, I'm not supposed to eat you, but they were looking at you. It's bad for your health, but they were looking at you. Oh, that's just, no way can you resist them. So I put all this stuff down. I had some nice lettuce and some carrots. But, you know, an apple. You know what they did? With their nose, push aside the healthy food, and they went right down to the very bottom, the pizza. And I found what Australian kangaroos love more than anything else is pizza. I can stop them. Okay, fair enough. Even the kangaroos like junk food. Given half the chance. I also remember, just old stories. I'm going to get some criticism on the internet for this, but you know that once we had a whole lot of spaghetti. Because you know, you guys, you come and feed the monks and nuns. Sometimes you give too much of the same thing. So I had all this spaghetti left over. And so somebody, one of the laymen working in the kitchen, put it in the forest for the kangaroos. And I saw for the first time this kangaroo eating spaghetti. And this poor little kangaroo, he was sitting there and spaghetti on either side of his mouth. He did not know what to do next. You remember the first time as a kid you ate spaghetti and you didn't know what to do? It's such a slippery thing to try and get down your throat. And for the first time, the kangaroo had the same experience. Should have put that on YouTube. That would have been very funny. But anyway, eventually found our way of eating spaghetti, even kangaroos, give them half a chance. But anyway, just because people are kind and these animals feel safe. It's beautiful echidnas we saw the other day. You know, little echidnas in the forest. You get right close to them, or the little possums with the babies on the back. And they're so safe that you can just pat the little baby with the mother underneath. Mother doesn't feel afraid at all. There's something very beautiful in that. So joyful. What's really joyful is they don't feel any fear. How many people can go out and feel no fear? It's a shame that we've lost this sense of peace and goodwill to all beings. But this is actually where we can get it from. We can learn it, first of all, how beautiful it is. And that's one of the great gifts we can give at Christmas. Real peace and goodwill. I remember going visiting my family at Christmas when I still had a mother and mother. She's dead now. So I'm free of that burden. Don't have to go. It's a long way to go to London. It's freezing cold this time of the year. So anyway, I do remember going visiting there once, visiting the family. You have great fun being a monk, visiting a family, because everybody in those days, this is, okay, England, very proper, very stiff upper lip, and they would never look at you, because you were a monk. They would actually, you know, usually see you coming along and just go on the other side of the road. They were afraid you might convert them or something, I don't know. But when it was Christmas time, now, I was making this journey every day, you know, from the temple to my mother's apartment and back again, and people never talked to you. But when it was Christmas Day, that was an exception. Everybody said, "Oh, good morning, Merry Christmas." I was like, what's the difference, Christmas Day or another day? Can't we say good morning and have a nice day at any old time? But I do that whenever I did go to London, in the underground. Underground's a great place to play around. Because no one looks at you in the underground. And so because I'm a monk, I can play around like that. I just go and sit next to somebody. Say, "Hi, how are you? I'm from Australia. I'm a Buddhist monk. What are you?" That's totally not done. If any of you from London or England, that is totally verboten. But because I wear a robe like this, you can do anything. You know, when you wear strange clothes, you can do strange things. It gives you permission. But what's the other time? I was also at the same occasion going visiting some of my relations in the Midlands, in a town called Stoke-on-Trent. And in the morning, we just went on a nice walk. It's one of those beautiful winter's mornings, which was quite weird. You know, when it was really clear and the sun was out. So I went for a walk, and I couldn't believe it. People were actually laughing at me. And they were pointing at me and laughing. I've never had that reaction at all in my life as a Buddhist monk. People pointing at me and laughing down the streets on a Sunday morning. And then, eventually, I found out the reason why. We came to this big billboard. The circus was in town. And then I realized why they were pointing to me and laughing. They thought I was one of the clowns. Well, I didn't mind. Of course, a bit of happiness that day as a Buddhist monk. But anyway, just the kindness which was shown to everybody on that one day, at least one day of the year, we can feel what it's like to be kind to one another, not to be afraid of one another, to actually to find the most beautiful parts of one another. That's part of what this Christmas is all about. You know, peace and goodwill to everybody. Don't care what religion you are, what race, what gender, what species you are. Yeah, everybody. Yeah, everybody, yeah. So to make sure it is a beautiful thing, an opportunity. So, you know, it's very easy to have peace and goodwill to animals and to other people, and the gays, the lesbians, people who are not like you. But the hardest one is to have peace and goodwill to the person you live with. So for goodness sake, isn't it a great opportunity? That's why we have days, celebrations we set aside from other days in the world to give us an excuse to do better than we normally do. An excuse to actually to practice some kindness and goodwill to other people, the people you live with. I don't know how many of you have difficulty in your lives, in living with a partner, but I notice that a lot of times it's our bad speech. Sometimes the way we criticize one another, put each other down, that's why you always know how long a person's been married by the tone of their speech. As the old joke says, when the first year of marriage, the wife listens to the husband. The second year of marriage, the husband listens to the wife. In the third year of marriage, the neighbors listen to both of you. Why are you laughing? Because there's a lot of truth in that. So instead of arguing like that, can't we actually use this as a circuit breaker time, saying, "Okay, darling, you know, it's the time of the year, we're supposed to have peace and goodwill to everybody, whether we're Christian, Buddhist, Muslim, or however, can't we at least have one day when we don't fight, like what happened in the trenches in the First World War? Can't we just put that aside for one day, reconcile, make peace with one another? Why should we make peace? Because love and peace is more important than being right." That's the reason why we have arguments, because everybody's convinced they're right And I think it's sometimes it's our education system is at fault there. Instead of actually sort of pointing out what's wrong in the world, we want to find out why, so we can find solutions. You know, if you're in the school system, if you're right, you get praised, you get a good mark. If you're wrong, you're put down and criticized. So being wrong, for the very earliest times of your education, you actually absorb this as like a very affront to your ego, something which is wrong with you, something which, you know, you should correct. And being right is important for your self of self-identity and your sense of self-worth. People who get all the right answers in the examination get prizes. People who get all the wrong answers get sort of expelled or have to get bad jobs, like being a monk. That's not a bad job. But you can see just how that idea of rewarding being right and putting down being wrong is encouraging us, when we actually live with one another, to refuse to be wrong and always to have to be right. And that causes all these arguments. Right or wrong is not the point. It's living in peace and harmony together. Now, wouldn't it be wonderful if our education system rewarded that? Not just how many right answers you got in the exam, gave you the prize, but actually how much cooperation, how much harmony, how much ability to work together you have. That's one of the reasons why I suggested, and I suggest here again, because this time now in Western Australia, just finished the examination, and people have just got their exam results last week, many kids. And those exam results all are your personal scores. And they're supposed to prepare you for life. And I've often said, it does not prepare you for life at all. It would be much better to reflect what's needed to succeed in real life is, say, the Year 12 exams. This is the university entrance exams here in Australia. The Year 12, the Grade 12 exams, should be maybe 70% personal score and 30% average over the class to which you belong. So if your whole class does well, you do well. If the whole class does bad, you do bad. Which means that you are rewarded, real reward, 30% of your Year 12 marks, if you help one another. Cooperation is important in life, not just being right. It's a terrible thing in our education system, you have to compete with your friends. Friends you've known for years, in those exams you're sitting next to each other and you don't share. It's called cheating. I don't call that cheating. I call that cooperation. And in real life, you need to cooperate. You need to work together. Your success in a marriage is not your personal score. It is how you can learn how to cooperate, cheat together. So put it in a different perspective over there. You see that we're rewarding the wrong things, and that's why we're creating this inability that people can cooperate together, live together, work together. And of course that means that at least we can, at Christmas time, we can cheat together, work together. It doesn't matter who's right and who's wrong. It's just we're going to love one another and just develop those qualities in our life. And of course the other beautiful thing about sort of this time, it's, I mean, people give presents at this time. And sometimes people think, oh, that's the worst part. But it's wonderful to receive presents, but it's even better to have the opportunity to give stuff. That's why it is a season of generosity, which is the other beautiful part of a human being. It's not just living together in peace and harmony, realizing being right is not the most important thing in the world. It's actually giving towards one another. That also means like giving people some space, giving people just the benefit of the doubt. know, giving up your controlling of this world and letting people just be who they are is the problem with most conflict in our modern world. We do expect far too much of one another. And sometimes the expectations in a marriage, the expectations in life are far too high. You know, people do have egos, unfortunately. They do have their quirks. They do have their bad ways of talking sometimes. And this is what people are like. As I've often said, I've never ever yet met a dog which doesn't bark, a cow which doesn't go moo, a wife which doesn't nag, a husband who doesn't say, I'll do it tomorrow, darling. This is the nature of people. And sometimes we think we want people to be different. We want to change people. What about giving people the freedom to be who they are? Giving a dog the freedom to bark. Giving your wife the freedom to nag. Giving your kid the freedom to cry. And giving yourself the freedom to be who you are. Totally imperfect. But sometimes we try so hard to change this world into something we think it should be. Look, there was this girl who asked me this question a few years ago. And she did a little demonstration to explain how she felt. She said, you know, she used her left hand and right hand. She said, this is my right hand. This is where I am. I'm down here somewhere. And this is where I want to be in life. She put her hand up here. She said, it's just so difficult. It's such so striving. You get so many obstacles. You know, reaching my potential, where I know I should be. And she said, it's so much stress and suffering. And I said, listen, lady, you've got it all wrong. If this is where you are and this is where you want to be, the only way to reconcile this is not striving to meet your goals, is actually lessening your goals to meet where you are. And if you put the left hand down and where you want to be in life is actually where you are, you're at peace. You have this wonderful sense of contentment and freedom. So why not lower your expectations and goals rather than always striving to meet what is usually an impossible goal? And for me, that's how we can be at peace with ourselves and love ourselves. Stop trying to be something you're not, that you can never be, that you'll, you know, I know that it's coming up to New Year and you're supposed to have New Year's resolutions. Quite a few years ago, I sort of made a resolution to lose weight. But it was an aspiration which I realized after much trying I could not meet. So instead of having my aspiration up here, my being thin and being fat down here, trying to move it up, it just wouldn't go. So eventually I found peace in my life by moving down my aspiration to where I am. Now that is happy. Okay, you may not live as long, but at least you die happily. Instead of living miserably and dying miserably. So, change your aspirations, you know, to be something which is a bit more within your reach. And especially this time. Otherwise, you can't have any peace at all in your life. This is peace and goodwill, happiness. If you can lessen your own expectations of yourself, so you're not kept on being rewarded for exceeding your aspirations, exceeding your goals, being the best in whatever it is, that just really sucks. You know, trying to be the best monk, that was just totally ridiculous. Even when I was at school, trying to be the best in the class. When you go to university, trying to be the best lover in the college. When you sort of leave the... guys, they have all sorts of stupidity. So do girls, in a different way. And you're always trying to be the best. There's just so much stress. So instead of trying to be the best, you just try and just, who am I? How good am I? I'm just going to be like that. And I'm going to accept myself for who I am. I'm going to at least have no spikes on myself, which scratches me. I'm going to love myself for who I am. That is the greatest gift you can possibly give yourself. the gift of acceptance. So if you want to give yourself a gift on this holiday season, give yourself a gift of acceptance. If it's your partner, yeah, I think I mentioned this last week, but I'm going to mention it again. Get a shoebox. Put in a gift. Just a little note saying, I accept you for who you are. I love you for who you are. I don't want you to change. All the things which irritate me, I would miss them if they weren't there. Write that on a piece of paper. Put that in a box. Get this beautiful wrapping paper, a nice ribbon, and put it under the Christmas tree. So there's all this other stuff people give you. You know, you don't really need that, but what do you really need? What would you like from your partner? From the people who you really love and care for? What would you want? So try that as a Christmas gift. Put the gift of acceptance, of love, of peace. You don't have to change, darling. It'd be good if you would, but you don't have to. Be honest. But that way, what would it be like for you if you had a gift like that given to you? And you didn't know what it was. And you just opened it. And it feels very light. And just a piece of paper inside saying, darling, I really love you. I'm sorry for all of the rubbish which I've given you over the years. But I really sort of appreciate you. And life wouldn't be the same without you. And do that. You know, this is a great life as a monk because you get involved in people's personal lives and just see how it really works. There was this lady used to come here a long time ago. She's dead and so is her husband. That's the reason I can say this without embarrassing them. And she was the worst battle axe I've ever seen. No battle axe, a woman who just always dominating the husband. Now, domestic violence goes both ways. And this was real domestic violence against this poor guy. Because even here, they would come on the weekend, you know, in a big ceremony, and in front of everybody, she'd say, George, George, come over here. George, get me some water, you stupid man. And he would say this in public all the time. And I felt so sad for poor old George. And then when she died, you know, I saw George and I said, how are you? I said, you must be so happy to be rid of her. He said, no, I miss her so much. I miss being told off. I miss being bullied. I miss her. It's really strange relationships. But, you know, you get so used to it. You get to love people for who they are. Because he obviously had some other qualities, you know, which was much, much more than just the words she said. And he was smart enough to focus on the other qualities. So, you know, in a relationship you have, why is it we keep on focusing on the negative part of what our partner does and says? You should never do that. Focus on the positive stuff and give the gift of respect. To respect means seeing something in another person which is worthy of that respect. Noticing it. And for all the people I've met in my life, and I met lots of people, thousands of people, you know, big criminals, prime ministers, and not prime ministers, dictators. You know, one of the scariest people I've ever met was Hun Sen, the prime minister president of Cambodia. He's still there. He really gave me the creeps. You know, it's still the president, so I better wash out. But, you know, you can see his power was just... But I'm sure he has a beautiful side to him. And, you know, I should have done that, see his beautiful side. And he would have shown that back to me. I've met so many people. I've never met even one person yet, even going to see criminals, famous criminals, who've not got a beautiful side to them. I don't know if there's anybody my generation from UK... I remember going into Broadmoor Jail once, which is the jail in UK for the criminally insane, and going visiting one of the Cray brothers, Ronnie Cray. You know, he was a very famous criminal. And afterwards he said, oh, thank you for coming to visit. When I get a few quid, which means a few British pounds, I'll send some to your monastery. He was actually generous. He's a nice guy. As many of these people actually are. If you see the nice part in them, they show it back to you. Which is one of the great reasons why we can love and care for one another. When I went to see that great monk, when all my questions disappeared, he saw the nice side in me. And I realized he was looking at the right side, nice side of me. So I felt totally accepted and at peace. What a wonderful thing we can do to others. And then we do it to ourselves. See the beautiful side in ourselves. It's there. I've seen it. If you can see that too, you find this beautiful sense of peace to yourself. It's a wonderful thing. You don't need to be improved. You are good enough. It's one of the reasons why I really don't like the self-improvement movement. Well, that saying is you're not good enough. Who says you're not good enough? You don't need to be improved. Poor old George, if he improved his wife, he'd miss the old one he got to love and care for. Your husband, do you really want him to be improved? Honestly? But no, he's good enough. If you want to improve them, you're missing the point. We learn to love a person for who they are. Because if you can do that to your partner in life. Look, when it comes to your partner in life, whether it's only your boyfriend, girlfriend, a long-term partner, how come you can't really appreciate them? Well, other people can. But then, later on in your relationship, maybe you have children. And even some of your children are so naughty. But you never feel like divorcing your children. You will love them forever, even though you don't know where they came from. Honestly, it's true. They come into your body, into your life. You don't know what's going to come out, you know, when you give birth. We've got all these hopes. But, you know, sometimes you get some monsters come out and sometimes some amazing people. And it's nothing to do with the parents. Sometimes it's just, you know, what comes out. You know, it's pretty much a lottery. So it's a pretty dangerous game, giving birth. But anyway, doesn't matter what comes out. If someone turns out to be a criminal, you know, be a drug courier, whatever. Mothers, especially mothers, they love their kid no matter what. They have total unconditional love for their children. And that's such a beautiful thing to see. Why is it, husbands, wives, parents, you can always have unconditional love for your child, but you don't have unconditional love for your partner? Why can't you say to your husband, to your wife, the same as your kids, I will love you forever? You don't have to be, you know, a great person. You don't have to fulfill all of these requirements. It's great if your kid does well in year 12, goes to university, but if they don't, you still love them. They're still welcome in your house. Why is it we can't treat our spouse that way? This is something which is, we expect too much from a husband, from a wife. We don't expect so much from kids. The kids, they are our blood, that's it, so we'll love them. Why can't we say that to the people we live with as our partner in life? Love them in the same way we love children. What a beautiful world that would be. And just because it's our children, why can't we love other children as well? Sometimes people ask me that. You're a monk, you never got married, you never had kids. Don't you miss having kids? And actually the answer is totally not, because quite frankly, please don't take offense at this, you are all my kids. And sometimes I look at you, you may be even older than I am, and I don't care, but I look at you and I care for you and I love you, and I'm really interested to make sure you do well in your life. And when you do well in your life, I feel like I'm a proud dad. When you come and you have these problems in your life and you solve them, you know, you've got some sort of disability and you sort of, you get a peace with it. Or you get all these emails saying, because of the talks, you know, that I'm now a changed person, I feel so good afterwards. I feel like a proud father going to the child's graduation. So, you know, you are my kids as well. Because I've extended just my field of loving kindness to have each one of you. So I don't miss having kids. I've got too many. All of you and all of you listening online. And why can't we have that same? Why just because it's our blood? Why can't we love other people as well? And extend this beautiful community. And not just with no other Buddhists. Just a few weeks ago we visited New Norcia Monastery again. You know, the Catholic monastery up in to the north of Perth. And I was just looking at one of the photos in our monastery of Abbot Placid and myself just by the bell tower. It's a classic photograph, big smiles on our faces. And they're like brothers. And having different religions is not going to divide us. We love each other. He's dead now, unfortunately, but had a lot of good times with him. Or even just some of the Anglicans, like good old Dean Shepherd. You know, the John Shepherd, he was the dean of St. George's Cathedral. Because we went to a interfaith gathering together. I think it was over in Supreme Court Gardens. And I think it was run by the temple in Maylands, the Fo Kwang Shan group. And he said, oh, it's going to rain. He said, no, Buddhist ceremonies, it does not rain. And he said, I bet it rains. I said, it won't rain, it's a Buddhist ceremony. And I said, okay, I'll bet you $1. And I didn't realize, I forgot the time, I wasn't mindful, I don't have $1. I don't have any money at all. But I was so confident I would win, I didn't mind. And it rained. And you know, for a year, he never let me forget that. He said, Ajahn Brahm, you Buddhists don't pay your debts. So eventually, I got one of the lay people. And I said, would you mind sort of, you know, donating $1? I said, well, yeah, to the donation box. No, to John Shepherd, the dean, because I owe him $1. I've got to pay off my gambling debts. So I admit it, Ajahn Brahm, I gambled and I lost. I'll never do it again. I'm sorry. But that's the fun you had with other people. You know, they were your friends, they were your brothers. And isn't that what we're really supposed to do at this time of the year and maybe all the year? The people who are different than us? What difference is there? They maybe have a different gender orientation, different religion than us. What's the difference? So there's no difference at all. So this is one time of the year we can give. And give that kindness and love, unconditional, to one another, even though we are different. Even though they harm and hurt us. But put that aside. There's another side to them as well. The kind, beautiful, wonderful side. And if one can actually keep focusing on that, we can create a good world. We start a good world inside of ourselves. Peace and goodwill to ourselves. Forgive. If you still have a problem with this, get that box. And as I said last week, put the gift card to me, with love from me. And put it under the Christmas tree. Whatever you want to give yourself. You know, I did that as a kid. I remember I was not getting enough Easter eggs at Easter time. And I loved chocolate Easter eggs. I was really into chocolate as a kid. And so, but I was also smart. I wasn't going to get enough chocolate Easter eggs. So I thought, I've got a solution to that. I'll buy them and give them to myself. So all these chocolate Easter eggs, which I bought and gave to myself. A great solution. So, if you haven't got enough presents for Christmas, buy one for yourself. But don't buy other stuff which you can buy at other times of the year. Buy something which is really useful. A box, a nice piece of paper, and write in it what you would really want in life. What would you want in life? For those who are sick, put good health in there. Just write, may I have beautiful good health. And put it in the box. Wrap it up. Leave it under the Christmas tree. And opening up with all the other presents. Psychologically, that is very powerful. It works. Because as you are opening something up, as you're doing some sort of ceremony, the whole thoughts, the mind is actually acting on your body and giving yourself some good health. If it's just respect, peace, kindness, you want to give that to yourself, want to give it to others. That's beautiful gifts. And you don't have to spend any money on that. Just spend some time. And that means that you have these beautiful gifts you can open up at Christmas. Gifts which you really, really appreciate. And give it to other people as well. Anyone you've had an argument with, put in there that I really forgive you. I shouldn't have said that. Whatever has happened between us, let that be in the past. And just put that in the box and wrap it up and put it under somebody's Christmas tree. What a beautiful gift that would be. So we have these occasions of things like Christmas, things like this season where we can take holidays and rest. Please make use of them. Because as a Buddhist, there's nothing we can't make use of. You always know that story of you get some shit in life, you dig it under the mango tree and make mangoes out of it. We use everything in life. All experiences of life we can make use of to grow in wisdom and compassion. And thereby, this is a Christmas time. This is a wonderful thing to make use of. So thank you for listening. And happy Buddhamas. Okay, look, enough of those really weak sadhus. It's a lot while before since I asked you to do this. If you do sadhus, give it everything you've got. Now, a few of you know what to do, so please, everybody, follow those people and follow me. Sadhu means like, congratulations, it's well, it's good. So really give it everything you've got. One, two, three. Sadhu! 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 Doesn't that feel much better? Very good. Okay, we've got some questions from overseas. Let's see what we've got today. And the first question is from the North Pole. Is having inner peace the same as letting go of all your worries and desires? It is. Any desire you have is disturbs the peace. So put the desires aside for a while. All the worries, put them down for a little while and have some peace. Yes, you have to do those desires and worries afterwards. You've got work to do, you've got stuff to do in your life. But have moments, opportunities, retreats, the car park in our monastery type possibilities. So you can just go to that car park in our monastery, sit down, relax, get some inner peace. Then afterwards you can go back to work again. So inner peace is letting go of all your worries and desires. When you want something, you can't enjoy what you already have. It's a great little saying. When you want something, you can't enjoy what you already have. You can't appreciate it. So at least for some time in your life, especially holiday time, Christmas time, don't want anything. And appreciate what you have. When you want something, you're looking at the future. You're looking at what's missing. When you stop desiring, you realize what you already have, which is more than enough. How can we be sure we don't muddle up being peaceful with being lazy? Look, this is a time for peace, goodwill, and laziness. This is the lazy season. Because people feel so guilty about being lazy. It's a guilt trip stuff. I think it comes about, what was it, when I was a kid in Christian schools, they say the devil makes work for idle hands. It doesn't make work for idle hands. Idle hands means you don't cause any trouble for other people. And you also have a bit of rest and peace. Why can't we have, every hour of the day, a lazy hour? Especially over Christmas. Learn how to do absolutely nothing. The trouble is, people don't know how to be lazy. And you actually learn how to be lazy by coming to places like this. Because people being lazy, what do you do if you think you're lazy? You just go and watch the TV, what's on the TV, you go and sort of read a book. That's not being lazy. You go and plan your autobiography. That's not being lazy. Being lazy means sitting down there and actually doing absolutely nothing. Being so lazy, you won't even think. You just be. That is called meditation. So actually, people are afraid of laziness. And they think they're lazy, they just can't do it properly. What most people think is laziness is just thinking and wasting time. Whereas being peaceful is not a waste of time at all. It's an investment of time in your health happiness, your ability to love and care for others. Lastly, when a situation or place is difficult, is it better to go somewhere you are more likely to feel better, for example, somewhere quiet and peaceful? Yes, it's more lovely to be able to find a nice, quiet, peaceful place when a situation or place is difficult. But remember, you always have to go back to that difficult place again later on. But you go to a place of peace and quiet to get perspective, to get rest, to re-energize, so you can go back and deal with that difficulty later. This is not escaping, this is taking time out so that you can actually get some perspective, relax, rest. It's just like when you're in the jungle, you can't see wherever you're going at all. The trees, the jungle is far too close. So you find a pyramid in the jungle, one of the similes from my life. When you climb to the top of the pyramid, because this happened when I went to Central America, 69, climbed up the pyramid in Tikal, and I didn't know what I was supposed to find at the top there. But I did discover the top of those pyramids were just above the tree line. So at the top of the pyramid, you're actually above the jungle. So you could see. In the days before Google Maps, now you could see the roads and the village you stayed the night before. Because you were above the jungle, you had perspective. But not only that, when you're above the jungle, you could see forever. I could see infinity in all directions, with nothing between me and the infinite on the top of that pyramid. The symbolism was so striking, I could understand why those pyramids were made. Imagine somebody, a kid, being taken up that pyramid for the first time in her life. Born in the jungle, grown up in the jungle, all you could see is a few trees in front of you. No perspective. That was a difficult place you're talking about in this question. So complicated. You find a pyramid, you climb up it. Not only can you get the bird's eye view, you can find out how everything fits together, like the Google map, but also you look above the jungle, you've got perspective. You see this vast emptiness which embraces the whole world. Beautiful. So that's actually what you do. When the situation is difficult, leave that situation, find a pyramid where you're out of the jungle, get perspective, and then when you go down that pyramid again, back into the jungle, not only have you got perspective, you have wisdom, you have kindness, and you find the difficulty is very easy to solve. Stay in the jungle, you can never find your way. Up the jungle, you find the paths, how you can escape. So that is always nice to find places of peace. And look, you don't need to be told what to do. Because that's the problem with many religions. People are always telling you what to do. Instead of that, just find a nice quiet place and see for yourself. Wisdom always comes from silence. Solutions to the problems of life come from you being quiet. All the questions get answered when you're in the presence of a beautiful person who gives you total acceptance. You don't have to be anything different. You're loved for who you are. I don't have to strive anymore. Peace at last. Any questions from anyone here? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we try to lessen it as much as we can. But it's my view, experience, that not all people can be vegetarians. I was living in a house as a student. I was a vegetarian. I was living with two vegans. they had a cat, and they tried to give the cat soy milk instead of real milk, and the cat just was getting really sick. So when it wasn't looking, I gave it milk, and it would always be going out into the fields catching mice, catching rabbits, stuff. So the point is, we're trying to limit it as best we possibly can, reduce. And if we want to sort of ban something or stop something, one of the problems is that, you know, if the Buddhist Society of West Australia was vegetarian, there'd be many people who would never come here. And the point is, we're trying to be open and not judgmental. Let people be. Open the door of your hearts to, you know, your wife, your husband, your kids, no matter who they are, no matter what they do. To give the love first, the kindness, rather than just the regulations and the orders. Does that make sense to you? Okay. Very good. Yes.
Lowering your expectations of yourself and the striving, that sort of struck a bit of a chord with me, because I know that there's been times in my past where I've needed to strive, and before that I had acceptance of where I was, and looking back in hindsight, I know that that acceptance wasn't a good thing for me, because I needed to strive because I was hurting myself and hurting the people around me in having that acceptance and continuing those unhealthy behaviours. I just wanted to know what you think about that.
Well, a lot of unhealthy behaviours often comes by being afraid of yourself, not really accepting yourself. So I don't think the acceptance went really deep enough. You know, because sometimes the behavior which hurts other people is often coming from a behavior of a psychology of not being at peace with yourself, not liking yourself, running away, being afraid, being guilty. And all of those comes from not really deeply appreciating yourself and being at peace with yourself. So some of that striving might be called like striving to find that inner peace, that inner acceptance. So you don't need, and you will not hurt another person. Many people who go into substance abuse, they go into that because they have hardly any self-esteem at all. They don't really feel they're worth anything. So they don't mind destroying themselves and destroying everyone else around them. And that's not acceptance at all. So sometimes the striving which we do, it always comes to that same old goal, is when we find peace with ourselves. And the great thing to know in life is you don't need to change yourself to be at peace with yourself. But when you find peace with yourself, that is when you change. Okay, so I think that's enough for this evening. So we now can pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then we can do whatever we need to do.
Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakkato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi.
Very good.
Oh ho. Sorry?